Thank you, Thomas.
Okay.
Thank you. Yeah, I got a little bit flustered by the lack of computer connection, but I think I'll recover. The other thing that's flustering me is the fact that I've got nothing to write on, so I'm going to have to... I was going to give you a Blackboard presentation here. So what I'm going to have to do is to show you a paper which is currently under discussion at our journal, Muse. It's changed from our Muse to our journal, hasn't it?
Yes.
So I'm going to talk about the permutations package, which has been niggling me for a long time. My general philosophy of life in R is when I see some mathematical thing or some neat little doohickey, I think, oh, that's great, I'll try and code it up in R if it isn't there. So that's what I've been doing for quite a lot of my life. I've been coding up things that shouldn't be present in R and aren't. So the thing that I noticed that's not present in R until I coded it up was how to deal with objects like this. What we see here is a function from a set of 9 elements to itself. So this is an invertible function. So we can take f of 5 equals 5, f of 4 equals 3, f of 3 equals 6, f of 1 equals 9, and so forth. So it's as though I've taken everybody in this room and I said, right, stand up, swap your seats around, and then sit down again. With the proviso that nobody leaves the room and everybody's seated. So it's a function, it's one to one and into. So it's invertible. So for example, f of 3 equals 6, but f of 6 equals 4. F of 3 equals 6, but if I want to invert that, I've got f of 6 equals 4. So I can go backwards and forwards and backwards and forwards with this function here. This function, it looks like quite a trite example of a mathematical object list, but it's quite deep. Anybody who's studied group theory will know that any group, finite or infinite, is actually a subgroup of the group of permutations of a set. And this means that it's quite interesting from a pure mathematical point of view. And coding it up is actually quite challenging. Primarily because if I want to write this object down here in a slightly different format, you'll notice that f1 goes to 7, 7 goes to 8, 8 goes to 9, and 9 goes back to 1 again. So I can code up this object, at least, I can code this object up in terms of a cycle form here. 1 goes to 9, 9 goes to 8, 8 goes to 7, and 7 goes back to 1 again. 1 to 9, 9 to 8, 8 to 7, and 7 back to 1 again. This is the inverse function here. So we can write it down in cycle notation like this, because 1 goes to 9, goes to 8, goes to 7, goes back to 1 again, and this is a closed cycle form here. And again, if you look at it in terms of group theory, then the reason this is interesting is that, it was originally invented for solving quintic equations and for sorting out polynomial equations, but it's got a rich and varied mathematical structure underneath it. And there's no capability of doing this in R, so I'm going to show you how I've sorted it out in R. This is the R package in use, and I'll show it to you in use now. I can get my R pages. This one might be better. Here it is. So I'll just show you a random permutation. We'll have 10 of them on 4. So what this corresponds to is a set of 4 elements, and we're mapping the set of 4 elements to itself, and it's in lines here. So the first line here says person 1 goes to seat 2, person 2 goes to seat 3, person 3 goes to seat 4, person 4 goes to seat 1. So f of 1 is 2, f of 2 is 3, f of 3 is 4, and so forth. A dot means, well, they say it's one of these things that makes this work difficult, because what I want to do is to put it in a nice R-centric format. So the print method for this specifies a dot if it's the identity function. So line 4 here corresponds to nobody's moved, which is a 1 in 24 chance. But most of them have moved somewhere else. If I show you R perm of 10, let's say 6, I was going to say it's very unlikely that everybody's moved, but of course there it is. We'll just try that again with a slightly larger number. Hopefully this will show you. Here we go. So most people move most of the time. There are a few R-type desiderata. I think one thing that R does consistently as the design philosophy is that it allows the user to make decisions. It doesn't really tend to do things for you or force you to do things in a particular way. And you'll see from this format here, this R perm here, which is written in word form, which is the first one. It tells you what each number goes to. But what we don't see is the cycle structure of each of these permutations here. So if I want to do that, I'll just generate a new one here and use my right assignment and call it x. So there it is. As cycle x, prints it out in four in cycle form. So what we can see is that the first operation here, 1 goes to 9, 9 goes to 2, 2 goes to 3, 3, 7, blah, 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 blah. It's just a single cycle of line 9. This one's a single cycle of a smaller size. It's obviously leaving some elements fixed. And this one has got repeated, has got two distinct cycles. And this is quite important when it comes to working out subgroups and things like that. And here's an even smaller one. If I say x, I can say, sorry, when I was talking about R not forcing things upon you, I can either store x in terms of word form or in terms of cycle form, like that. And it's very expensive to convert between one form and the other. It's not error prone as such, it just takes a long time, and it's a lot of faffing around, and there's lots of design choices to be made here. So when I wrote the package, I said the user should decide whether to store the object in word format or in cycle format, because cycle format is good for some things and word format is good for another one. Incidentally, there was somebody speaking this morning about they wished that R had zero indexing, and I'm very, very glad that R doesn't have zero indexing, because I need my 1 to be my first column. I need my column 1 to be 1, not 0. Okay? So I can store it as, if I go as dot, if I go x, which is that, if I go x squared, it's a much, much easier process to translate it into a cycle first and then raise it to the second part. So I can do that, and you'll see that what's happened automatically here, because it's picked up that I've overloaded this power operation here, it's converted it to cycle form, and then it's done that twice, and so it's gone, each cycle has gone through two steps. So I can raise it to the 12th power, or whatever I like. Ah! And here you'll see the bane of my life. The reason that this is difficult is that there, which of course corresponds to the null cycle, which is the identity permutation. So I've had to write new words. Null doesn't do it. NA doesn't do it. It has to be a null cycle. I've had to write a special topic. And in fact, you'll see that x to the power 12, if I do that. Oh, no, it's not showing up particularly nicely. If I go perm order of x, that shows me the minimum power that I need to raise my object to get back to the identity element. So if I go x to the power perm order of x, it sends, because it's all vectorized, it sends each object of x back to the identity element. So this is basic group theoretical structure which I've built into this package. The reason for me doing it is this thing, is this reason here. Which should be behind here, which is, there's some nice examples here, which is the megamix. Just pinch in a little bit. I take it everybody here will be familiar with the Rubik's Cube. Well, this is like a Rubik's Cube, but it's a dodecahedral shape. It's a much more complicated puzzle. In the same way that the Rubik's Cube has got squares, that faces that can turn by a quarter of a turn, this has got, instead of 6 squares, this has got 12 pentagonal faces, which makes for a much more complicated puzzle, because you've got 126 facets there as opposed to the Rubik's Cube, which has got 54, so you've got almost three times as many. It's a much more complicated puzzle. And you'll see that the reason I need the permutations package, the reason I wrote it, was to keep track of where all these little objects go when you move it around, when you rotate the face of the puzzle, or for that matter when you rotate the whole solid. The thing I was trying to do is to take this puzzle here, which is in its start form, and turn it into this superflip here. When you give a mathematician a puzzle like the megamix, the first thing you do is try to make nice, pleasing patterns with it. And this doesn't look particularly pleasing, just to look at it, but let me explain what's going on here. It's, what I've done is flipped each edge. So if you take this face here, which is the blue one, you can see it's a solid blue, and take this edge here, the edge itself is in the right position, but I've swapped the green and the blue across. So it's green there and blue there, as opposed to here, where it's green and blue. This one, for example, is white and yellow flipped over, and that one's white and blue, and of course that one's red, which you can't see, and so forth. There are 30 edges on this shape here, and the goal is to swap all 30 edges across. The reason that's it, or one of the many reasons it's interesting, is that that pretty pattern there is the hardest possible in a very well-defined sense. It's the only motion which commutes past every other It's the only operation which commutes past every every operation you can do on the megabits. I've got what, 5 minutes left?
5 minutes. Did you do a discussion?
Okay. So the game is how, given that it's the hardest possible configuration, it's the hardest possible pretty pattern. What's the smallest number of moves you can use to accomplish this? Well, flipping edges is quite hard. You've got to move it around. It's all quite difficult. And of course, while you're flipping one edge over, all the others are moving around to make life very difficult for you. But somebody proved that you need at least 24 moves to accomplish the superclip. So 24 is an absolute lower bound. But the best anyone had discovered is 84. So 24 is a minimum, and the best known was 84. And there's lots of space between those two bounds, and I've been trying to raise the lower bound with no success at all, I might add. So then I tried to use numerical methods to bring the upper bound down from 84 down to as low as I could. And when I started this work, I had a sweepstake with my family. How well do you think I'll be able to do? Do you think I'll be able to do 24 or 25 or 30? And as my research went on and on and on, I found it harder and harder and harder and harder and harder to reduce that limit down from 84. That 84 looks like a very slack, well, it is, in one sense, a very slack limit. So, when I worked on this, I worked on it and worked on it and worked on it. You can see here, this is the Megaminx as represented in the package. The colour names there is a named vector of permutations in cycle form. The colour there on the right-hand side refers to the colour of the face that you turn. In fact, I'll show you this. Have I got time? How much time have I got?
That's all right,
3 minutes. Okay, well I'll show you here. Here, this is Megaminx. Oops. Megaminx. There it is. I can go Megaminx to the power of 5. And of course, that turns back to the identity element because that corresponds to turning each one of these faces 5 times. Of course, if I go Megaminx to the power of 4, that's because I've turned it round backwards and it's all a terrible, terrible mess. I can go something like white times yellow, oops, dark yellow, and you'll see it's quite complicated. Most of the numbers, this is in word format of course, most of them are in dot form because it's left most of the facets unchanged. I'm just changing 2 out of the 12. I can also go something like white divided by dark yellow, which means doing the white and then the dark yellow face anti-clockwise by one click. I really want to show you that the package is an R-centric way. I've taken pure mathematics and I'm coding it up in a way that makes sense in an R view. Permprod takes the product of all the elements of the vectors, so that corresponds to turning each one of these faces a fifth of a turn. And of course I can coerce that to cycle form if I really want to, as dot cycle. This is probably going to be a bit of a mess. Bonk. And we can see I've got a scroll bar here. Blah, 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 there it is. So, how did I manage to do? Well, there is the Megaminx thing. And we can see here, super flip here. So Clark offers an 83 turn sequence, which is this one here. You can see he's written it in rather a peculiar format. It's got power relationships and whatever. So I set myself the task of reducing it from 83. And I managed eventually to turn it into an 82. To put that in context, I had 1,000 computers working 24/7 for 9 months straight. Every stupid morning I would turn up to say, what's the shortest it's done? What's the shortest it's done? And every stupid day it was 83, 83, 83, 83, 83, 83, 83, 83, 83. And on Christmas Eve, Father Christmas came and gave me an 82-turn superflip. The one observation I'd make is, it's a dog's breakfast. There is no structure inside that that any, certainly that I can understand. So, ladies and gentlemen, an 82 flip system.
Okay, thank you very much. One question.
there is. That I had to use quite gnarly group theory to search through it in an intelligent way, rather than just hitting it with a blunderbuss. I had to invoke rather sophisticated concepts from group theory, not all of which are in the package, I might add. A lot of the concepts from group theory I had to take from Gap and Sage and other pure mathematics packages, which I can't really emulate in the package, but I could use the package as the workhorse to do the donkey work of trying through all these bazillions.